from deep inside your radio.
Is James Hattori the Ken Kashiwahara of the 21st century? Just have to ask. Because he's the answer to that question is the follow-up to, of course, another question, which is, why is it that Asian American women are so much more featured on news than Asian American men? See, that would be the predicate. Ladies and gentlemen, a lot of news about Blackwater, the private security firm that got involved in a kerfuffle in Iraq a couple weeks ago. A fatal kerfuffle. That would be a kerfatal. And the Iraqi prime minister said, they're out of the country. We're suspending their license. Oh, excuse me. They're back in the country. They don't need a license. And I'm the all-powerful Iraqi prime minister. But there's now more news coming out about Blackwater. For example, four Blackwater contractors, private security contractors, were the people killed in Fallujah, which set off the fearsome battle, two battles for Fallujah, that many experts, many observers regard as at least one of the turning points in a war that's either had too many or none at all. Now comes the Washington Post to say that Blackwater brushed aside warnings from another security firm and focused on cost, not safety. Who would have figured that before it sent its personnel to escort trucks to Fallujah in 2004, resulting in that incident? This is according to a congressional report, not just to the Post. The report by the majority staff, so they're Democrats, of the House Committee on Oversight, provides details about how cost considerations appeared to shape Blackwater's decisions that led to the brutal deaths of employees. For example, the assessment said Blackwater, then under a Defense Department contract, was supposed to use vehicles with armored protection kits, but no such vehicles had been obtained by the time of the killings. A Blackwater internal report obtained by the committee quoted an employee who said the contract, quote, paid for armored vehicles, but that management in North Carolina made the decision to go with soft skin due to cost, unquote. Those are vehicles without armor, I guess. Soft skin. Soft skin. It can be fatal. The report disclosed another complicating factor was a contract dispute with a different company. The report suggested Blackwater never intended to armor its own vehicles. Instead, Blackwater employees were told to, quote, string along, unquote, the other company in hopes of forcing them out of their contract or giving them no choice to buy us armored cars. That's what the committee staff says they got from interviews with Blackwater officials. Blackwater says the report is a one-sided version of this tragic incident and fails to acknowledge that the terrorists determined what happened that fateful day. Asked about the report, General Peter Pace, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, said, had there been times when they performed to a standard we don't appreciate? Apparently, yes, and those are under investigation. And by the way, thank God they're not gay, unquote, General Pace. The committee staff obtained evidence about how another security company warned Blackwater of the dangers in the Fallujah mission. Blackwater took the job from a third firm known as Control Risks Group, which had twice turned down the request to provide protection for a Fallujah trip, arguing that such a convoy escort should be undertaken by the military. What a novel idea. Let the military do the shooting? You're darn tootin'. Blackwater ignored the warnings and reduced the number of security personnel assigned to the mission. Well, that'll make it seem less dangerous, won't it? In another story, also in the Washington Post about Blackwater this week, a wonderful buried lead way, way at the end of the story comes this. The very last paragraph. Quote, the deaths of contractors from Blackwater helped precipitate the debacle in Fallujah in 2004, and now the loss of Blackwater is causing disruptions in the war effort in 2007, unquote, a military intelligence officer. Further quoting, why are we creating new vulnerabilities by relying on what are essentially mercenary forces? He asked. It's one buried lead. And the second, not picking any favorites today, from a story on an appearance by Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee in front of a center-right think tank in Washington, He's a Republican, remember, running for president. Again, way down in the story, Huckabee questioned whether President Bush was in charge at a critical point in the hunt for al-Qaeda. He said Donald Rumsfeld called off that 2005 raid into Pakistan to nab Osama bin Laden's top deputy because the mission had grown just large enough that he thought it would need the Pakistan government's approval. Huckabee says, if I'm president, I'll make those decisions. Huckabee wonders if Bush was in charge. And pigs are, watch out, those pigs are overhead today. Hello, welcome to the show.
Came in last night at 10:30. That baby of mine wouldn't let me in, so move it on over.
Move it on over.
Move it on over.
Move it on over.
Move over, little dog, 'cause the big dog's moving in. She's changed the lock on our front door. My door key don't fit no more. So get it on over.
Move it on over.
Scoot it on over.
Move it on over.
Move over, skinny dog, 'cause the fat dog's moving in. This dog house here is mighty small, but it's better than no house at all. So ease it on over.
Move it on over.
Drag it on over.
Move it on over.
Move over, old dog, 'cause our new dog's moving in. Around, but I done let the deal go down, so pack it on over.
Move it on over.
Tote it on over.
Move it on over.
Move over, nice dog, 'cause a mad dog's moving in. She warned me once, she warned me twice, but I don't take no one's advice, so scratch it on over.
Move it on over.
Shake it on over.
Move it on over.
Move over, short dog, 'cause a tall dog's moving in. Slide it on over.
Move it on over.
Sneak it on over.
Move it on over.
Move over, good dog, 'cause a mad dog's moving in. Remember, pup, before you whine, that side yours and this side mine, so shove it on over.
Move it on over.
Sweep it on over.
Move it on over.
Move over, cold dog, 'cause a hot dog's moving in.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show, starting right up with news from outside the bubble. First, from the British newspaper The Guardian, the world's largest seafood company is coming under intense pressure to shift its fish farms farther out to sea after its largest shareholder claimed the fish farming industry was helping to kill off wild salmon and trout. A coalition of 32 conservation, angling, and aboriginal groups from the UK, Canada, Norway, Ireland, Iceland, and the United States has written an open letter to Marine Harvest, a company which just happens to produce a third of the world's farmed fish. John Fredriksen, a Norwegian shipping and oil industry billionaire, owns 29% of Marine Harvest, surprised the protesters by directly linking fish farms to plunging wild fish populations, a link the industry has repeatedly disputed. A keen angler, who is reportedly worth $5 billion, $6 billion, he told a Norwegian newspaper, quote, I am concerned about the future for wild salmon. Fish farming should not be allowed in rivers, in fjords with salmon rivers. The letter's signatories, who include Friends of the Earth, Scotland, several British Fishermen's Associations said they applauded Mr. Fredrickson's remarks, adding, quote, sea lice, ugh, infectious diseases and genetic and ecological interactions of escaped farmed salmon with wild salmon are a serious threat to the future of both wild Atlantic and Pacific salmon. Fredrickson's unexpected intervention has come at a critical time for the aquaculture industry. Last week, official figures confirmed that wild salmon and trout numbers on the west coast of Scotland, where the UK's fish farm industry is concentrated, are still in long-term decline. And from the British newspaper The Independent, as many as 1 in 10 soldiers, British soldiers, serving in Iraq and Afghanistan, a much higher proportion than previously expected, will develop a mental health problem due to the stress and horror of combat, according to the head of one of Britain's leading armed forces health organizations. Commodore Toby Elliott. See, only in Britain could Toby be a Commodore. The chief executive of Combat Stress, the mental health charity that helps to treat traumatized servicemen, warned this week of a potential time bomb of casualties bearing mental scars. Current figures show about 6% of soldiers, British soldiers, develop some form of mental illness. We're likely to prove an underestimate, he said. Combat Stress says a lot of the veterans on our books don't realize they have mental health problems until they've left the service. The average guy will not seek help for 13 years. One of the reasons that soldiers are reluctant to talk about their problems is because of the culture of the Army and the male psyche, which is not to complain or admit weakness, says Commodore Elliott. By the way, this is, the British Ministry of Defense says it takes the issue of mental health seriously. Mm-hmm. By the way, regarding the issue of stress for British service personnel, their tour of duty, 6 months. Tour of duty of Americans in Iraq, 15 months and counting. And according, that's news from outside the bubble, although this just sneaks into the bubble, just barely, from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Thousands of U.S. soldiers in Iraq, as many as 10 a day, are being discharged by the military for mental health reasons. But the Pentagon isn't blaming the war. It says the soldiers had pre-existing conditions that disqualify them for treatment by the government. Many soldiers and Marines being discharged on this basis actually suffer from combat-related problems, according to experts. We'll be the judge of those experts, won't we? But by classifying them as having a condition unrelated to the war, the Defense Department is able to quickly get rid of troops having trouble doing their work while saving the expense of caring for them. The result appears to be that many actually suffering from combat-related problems such as post-traumatic stress disorder or traumatic brain injuries don't get the help they need. But hey, look at the good side. They're trained to kill, and they're on the loose. And they're ticked off. What could be wrong? What could the rest of us have to fear from them? I am disappointed, ladies and gentlemen, in the Pentagon for not going the one step further that would appear to be appropriate and say, well, of course you were crazy. Why else would you have enlisted in this stupid war? You know, really, really set the bar high. Senator Kit Bond, Republican of Missouri, and Barack Obama have written and inserted into the Defense Authorization Bill a provision that would make it harder for the Pentagon to discharge thousands of troops. Bond said he learned of the practice from returning Iraqi veterans. He called it an abuse of the system and inexcusable. That's from a Republican. Obama said the practice is deeply disturbing. Pentagon spokesman declined to discuss the matter because it was related to current legislation. The reasons for not discussing matters get better every week. It's connected to pending litigation. No, now it's connected to pending legislation. Well, it's an L word. It's an L word with a Latin twist to it. I don't know. Oh, you know. Here we are. Yeah, I was almost afraid I'd left a lovely clipping at home, but I didn't. Anyway, back to this story. Defense Department records show 22,500 cases of personality disorder discharges have been processed over the last 6 years. That's a lot of personality disorder discharges, isn't it? The issue is a window into the broader problem of psychological damage to Iraq veterans. Experts say it has three main causes: multiple and longer deployments, the stress of fighting an insurgency with no breaks and everyone always on the front line, and better and faster medical care that helps troops survive horrific physical injuries that often leave psychological scars. But look, here's the good news is that even if we gave them 6 month tours of duty, they'd still be stressed, according to the Brits. So I say keep them over there forever. Let them adjust. Because it's going to be a long war. We'll get to more of that. But apropos of things that cannot be discussed or explained, the White House altered a transcript of the president's remarks in New York this week. And in an appearance with city officials, including Mayor Bloomberg, Bush chose to spotlight his signature education bill, the No Child Left Behind Act. The president pronounced himself pleased by a recent report that math test scores have improved, using it as evidence that the law is working. Quote, and this is the quote from the New York Times, "Children's do learn," unquote. Well, the entire sentence is, "Children's do learn when standards are high and results are measured." Children's do learn. President of the United States, ladies and gentlemen. The White House official transcript appeared the next day and took the S off of children. According to Dana Perino, who took over as press secretary this month, the White House stenographers were responsible for disappearance of the S, and she had instructed them to correct the correction by putting it back with this explanation. Quote, "You know that the president, it is no secret, sometimes makes grammatical errors," unquote. Last time I looked, it's not a grammatical error to use a plural form of a word that doesn't exist in the language. It's another kind of error. It's a kind of error that when it comes out of the mouth of people who aren't president of the United States, usually gets them derided as ignoramuses. I think it's that kind of error. Speaking of the Army, the Army's top officer, General George Casey, told Congress this week that his branch of the military has been stretched so thin by the war in Iraq that it cannot adequately respond to another conflict. This guy's still in uniform, and he's saying that. Usually they wait. Of course, he's ticked off because President Bush pulled him out of Iraq because he didn't favor the surge. You see, this is one of the strongest warnings yet from a military leader that repeated deployments to war zones in the Middle East have hamstrung the military's ability to deter future aggression. Casey told the House Armed Services Committee the Army is out of balance. The current demand for our forces exceeds the sustainable supply. Well, Economics 101 would say pay them more. We are consumed with meeting the demands of the current fight and are unable to provide ready forces as rapidly as necessary for other potential contingencies. Does that mean we're not going to invade Iran? I'm confused now. Military analysts said this was a highly unusual move that underscores Casey's growing concern about the health of the Army. He chose a public forum, even though he has ample opportunity to speak to lawmakers behind closed doors. Republican Representative John McHugh of New York said Casey's testimony was, quote, "just downright frightening," unquote. Meanwhile, of course, we're going to be spending $4 zillion on the war, including $17 billion to manufacture thousands of new hard-skin vehicles. Casey said the Army has been growing, the strain on the Army has been growing steadily since the invasion, the longest sustained combat for an all-volunteer American force since the Revolutionary War. The Pentagon and military analysts have documented the signs of the breakdown, which includes serious recruiting problems and exodus of young officers, and steadily falling readiness rates of nearly every unit here at home. The message: the Army will need more money and more resources to ensure it's prepared to look to the future. More money. More money for the Army. Less money for everything else. Don't you think? Ladies and gentlemen, spotlight on our friends in Pakistan. Oh, before we get to that, sort of an overview of democracy in the world. We got that this week. You know, this whole thing supposedly is about democracy. Well, it was. That's how it started out. Of course, it's evolved. The mission has evolved. That's the kind of evolution they believe in. But this week we got a report from Freedom House, a U.S. government-supported organization, on the state of democracy in the world. And the news is: democracy and good governance are on the retreat in a number of countries around the world. Human rights and governance have worsened in Russia and Iran. States across the world are attempting to follow the model of China and Russia, seeking to modernize the economy while keeping a central grip on power. Among those countries, Libya, Tunisia, and Algeria. Egypt has been both economically unsuccessful and politically repressive, and democratic developments have been stopped in their tracks by coups in Thailand and Bangladesh. So much for the March of Democracy. Well, it's marching. A new report by a prestigious Washington think tank claims that the two countries most vulnerable to nuclear theft are Russia, no surprise, and Pakistan, increasing the possibility of additional pressure on Islamabad to open its facilities for international inspection. Oh, we're not doing that? No, we're not. Pakistan's nuclear stockpiles face huge threats, according to this report, from armed jihadi groups and nuclear insiders with a demonstrated willingness to sell sensitive nuclear technology. Why, that's never happened to Pakistan. This according to a group called the Nuclear Threat Initiative, established by Ted Turner. The report claims that the so-called nuclear insiders have in the past demonstrated sympathy for extreme jihadi causes. That couldn't be Pakistan. There are... If al-Qaeda terrorists can twice come close to assassinating President Musharraf with the help of Pakistani military officers... Well, interesting. Didn't know they had help from Pakistani military. Did you? Who could rule out the possibility that other military officers guarding nuclear weapons might be convinced to help al-Qaeda? Is the question from this report. But Pakistan stands firm. It has rejected a proposal to let the UN... question A.Q. Khan, the great proliferator of Pakistani nuclear weapons and know-how. Nuclear weapons and know-how. On Tuesday, the former Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto said she would let the UN nuclear watchdog put questions to Dr. Khan if she returned to office. He's only leaked nuclear secrets to Iran, North Korea, and Libya. Hasn't leaked any to Nebraska, so I guess his hands are clean in that regard. Pakistan's foreign ministry says the authorities had fully investigated Dr. Khan's activities during his period under house arrest and had passed on the results to the UN. They will not let the UN do its own investigating. And, in case you're still not convinced, three terrorism suspects arrested this month in Germany had acquired detonators that originated in Syria. See, we're mad at Syria. We even encouraged, perhaps, the Israelis to attack them. But these same terrorism suspects arrested this month in Germany received direct orders to act from operatives in Pakistan. Boy, imagine what the world would be like if they were our enemies. Ooh, I shudder to think. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
Sorry,
Well, it's really a Los Angeles dog trainer correction, but it's so apologetic in tone. From Los Angeles dog trainer, the obituary of photographer Joe O'Donnell incorrectly reported that O'Donnell was a White House photographer during the administrations of Truman, Eisenhower, Kennedy, Johnson, and Nixon. O'Donnell took publicity photos of presidents in the White House for the USIA, but he was never an official White House photographer, a position that did not even exist until the Johnson administration. Also, based on a claim he had made, the obituary reported O'Donnell was one of several photographers to have taken a famous picture of John F. Kennedy Jr. saluting his father's casket at the 1963 funeral. Several photojournalists have challenged that and offered evidence that the shot O'Donnell took credit for was taken by someone else. In addition, O'Donnell claimed that he took the photograph of Stalin, Franklin Roosevelt, and Winston Churchill at the Tehran Conference in 1943 that ran with the obituary. That claim is also in doubt. In light of these facts, the Times erred in running an obituary of O'Donnell. And P.S., he's not dead. A Burmese official has apologized. What, for the 20 years of unpleasant military rule? No, for the death of a Japanese video journalist during the anti-government protests after Japan strongly protested the incident. Kenji Nagai died after he was shot in the chest in Rangoon, the first foreign casualty of the protests. Burmese Foreign Minister Nyan Win responded to Japanese protests with the apology. An apology for rap lyrics. At a House hearing chaired by former Black Panther Representative Bobby Rush. Ain't it weird how time does weird things to people? The apology came from Master P, previously a dominant force in rap, who has recently struggled to find a hit. No, he's not apologizing for that. Master P, whose real name is Percy Miller. Yeah, I guess you would have to change it to be a rapper. Hi, I'm Percy Miller, and now here's my new rap. He said rap artists need to consider how fans might be affected by their music. While societal woes contribute to violence and other problems, Master P said we are inflaming this problem by not being responsible. He says he's devoted himself to producing cleaner music with positive messages, hence the lack of hits. He apologized to, quote, all the women out there. I was honestly wrong. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe apologized this week to the Japanese public for the turbulence caused when he abruptly resigned nearly 2 weeks ago. It was the worst timing, he said at a press conference, at a hospital where he's been receiving treatment for stress-related stomach illness. Stress? Sent him to Iraq. Duke President Richard Broadhead acknowledged this week he failed to reach out to three wrongly accused lacrosse players at the North Carolina school. He apologized for his and Duke's role in the case. He said some faculty members made ill-advised and divisive statements, and he should have been clear they were not speaking for Duke. If there's one lesson the world should take from the Duke lacrosse case, it's the danger of prejudgment and our need to defend against it at every turn, Broadhead said. I thought it was the need to pay less attention to lacrosse. After leaving a patient stuck inside a CT scan machine for 5 hours, officials at Arizona Oncology Associates said they have taken swift, decisive, corrective action to avoid anything like this ever happening again. The distressed cancer patient, a 67-year-old woman, apparently was forgotten by the Arizona Oncology staff after she underwent a CT scan at an office last week to determine if her bone cancer had spread. The woman finally realized the staff had left and locked the office for the night, causing her to panic while struggling to get out of the machine to call 911 for help. Responding to her concern that she was exposed to excessive radiation during her ordeal, a spokesperson said the scan had been completed. The patient was in absolutely no danger of overexposure. The physician and the staff member involved in the incident have apologized to the patient. Japan's new prime minister has apologized as well, but denied wrongdoing after a newspaper reported his office had altered the names of political support groups on receipts for donations. Yasuo Fukuda was chosen prime minister this week to succeed Shinzo Abe, who quit suddenly after a year in office marred by scandals. Well, that would be the cause of the stress then. This was bad paperwork, says Fukuda. As the person ultimately responsible, I feel deeply ashamed. Arizona State quarterback Rudy Carpenter apologized this week for swearing during a live interview on the radio after the Sun Devils' victory over Oregon State. He swore after a victory. That's sportsmanship. Nobody likes a bad winner. Quote, "You guys heard the interview on the radio," Carpenter told reporters at his weekly campus press conference. "I just want to apologize for that. I really did not mean to do that. I really do apologize. I'm sorry. I won't do that again." And finally this week, a very confusing apology. This from MSNBC's David Schuster on Hardball.
On Monday evening, while guest hosting the 6 p.m. Eastern hour, I conducted an interview with Tennessee Republican Marsha Blackburn. My congresswoman spoke at length about a newspaper ad that criticized General Petraeus in what I believed was an effort to examine Representative Blackburn's priorities. I then asked her to name the last soldier from her congressional district killed in Iraq. She responded, quote, "The name of the last soldier killed in Iraq from my district, I do not know." After that response, I identified who I believe to be that fallen soldier, a Tennessean killed in Iraq last month. But according to Pentagon documents, that young man came from a town inside a neighboring congressional district, not from Representative Blackburn's. And for that, I apologize for that mistake.
All right. Except for this. According to the Memphis Commercial Appeal, the tiny hamlet of Bonacqua, Tennessee, that means good water, is where the soldier lived in the months immediately prior to entering the Army. The Census Bureau places his home in Blackburn's 7th Congressional District, the congressperson that David Schuster had so questioned. "He lived there for close to a year immediately prior to entering the Army," said a woman who permitted him to stay at her house while the soldier was dating her daughter. So maybe he'll be apologizing for his apology next. Oh, man. Wouldn't that be a highlight of Apologies of the Week? A copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
While standing at the junction on 42nd Street, I idly kick a pebble lying there. try to stretch out and knit. Something blocking my feet. Finally the lights came up and I could clearly see a slab of engraved marble staring up at me. I imagine my surprise. Well, I thought I'd left it at home. There's no doubt I'm sitting on my
This is Le Show, and ladies and gentlemen, there appears to be a new consensus developing among the Chatterati class in Washington and New York, especially Washington, reflected partly in the performance by the three front-running, according to the polls, Democratic candidates in this week's presidential debate, where all three of them invited to say that they would promise that United States troops would be out of Iraq by the end of their first term, i.e. 2013. All three said, I can't promise that. The consensus seems to be a combination of the failure of the Democrats since they got the majority in Congress to do anything to affect the course of the war, and the success of the General Petraeus campaign that occurred at the earliest part of this month. And so you now have a story in the Washington Post this week saying the most likely outcome in Iraq, quoting an Army lieutenant colonel who has served two tours there, is a Shia tyranny of the majority, either with our assistance or despite our opposition. But the story in the Washington Post concludes, however, it appears now that no matter who inhabits the White House, the United States may be resolved or resigned to an enduring presence in Iraq. America has taken a deep breath, says a counterinsurgency advisor to General Petraeus. Continuing the quote, America has taken a deep breath, looked into the abyss of pulling out, and decided, let's not do it yet. That's what America's decided. Ladies and gentlemen, I just thought I'd tip you off to that, in case you weren't consulted again. This was a week in which that consensus was solidified by excerpts coming out of a new book, The Evangelical President, by Bill Salmon of the Washington Examiner. Salmon says, President Bush has quietly sent advice through intermediaries to Hillary Clinton and other Democratic candidates, urging them to be careful in their campaign rhetoric so they don't limit their options should they win. Bush has been urging candidates, quote, don't get yourself too locked in where you stand right now. If you end up sitting where I sit, things could change dramatically. And that's a quote from the White House Chief of Staff. Of course, former President Clinton has been busy on his own this week doing interviews all over the tube from his Clinton Global Initiative, I don't know what it is. It's some conclave in New York of world leaders and media people. I know Arianna Huffington was there. Keith Olbermann was there. It came into the debate when Hillary Clinton was asked whether she felt constrained to disclose the names of the contributors to that organization. His organization, since it might impact on her choices if she were president. And she said, no, or words to that effect. I don't think she ever said that few words as an answer, but she said many more words to that effect. Anyway, the idea of President Bush giving that kind of advice made me wonder if perhaps it's not time for another episode of Clinton Something next here on Le Show.
Clinton something. The campaign years.
So, Mr. Carville.
Yeah.
Place has changed a little bit since you were last here.
Oh, yes, sir, Mr. President. You got pictures of Laura in here now.
Yeah. Yeah, every time I see the face of my favorite librarian, I'm reminded of how much I like to read.
Yeah, well, every time I see the face of my beloved Mary, I'm reminded of how much I like to beat the pants off Republicans.
Yeah, of course, you notice we're all wearing coats and ties in here now.
Yeah, yeah, grown-ups in charge, huh?
We like to think so.
Mm.
And we've had the sink completely re-porcelain.
Not really necessary to tell me that.
I just want you to know we really have restored honor and dignity to this place.
I appreciate that, Mr. President. You're leaving stains on a lot more garments now. Most of them uniforms.
All right, James, that kind of gets us around in a kind of disrespectful way to what I called you to talk about.
All right, sir, I'm going to get downright respectful now.
I know you're not formally connected with Hillary's campaign,
No, sir, she got her own team going her own way. I'm keeping busy winning elections overseas.
Same countries where Bob Shrum is busy losing elections?
Yes, sir.
Listen, but I know that... For that very reason, you make a good back channel to her campaign, deniable by her, you, me, the whole, what is it that the Jewish people say, the whole meshuggah.
Hey, those Jews, huh? They're always saying something. But look, sir, if you need a back channel,
yeah,
might I suggest Larry Craig?
Hey, James, this is deadly serious.
All right.
Future of the kingdom of the Lord depends on it. I need for Hillary to know that she might want to temper or even extemper her rhetorical isms on the campaign trail about the Iraq situation. Just, you know, on off chance that she wins or something, she might find out things look very different when you're sitting where I'm sitting.
Wow. Is the chair that comfortable?
Hey, who's running this meeting, me or Al Franken? Just saying, James. From here, you don't learn about the world the way the media tells it. You learn about it from trusted advisors before they spin the media version.
I know that, sir. I was part of that process. I made some sausages in my time.
Well, maybe she'll see that the Iraq situation is far more tenuous and fragile than even the media makes it out to be, and that we've got to stay there to prevent a protoclysm.
Well,
or maybe she'll see that we've made a lot more good progress than the media gives us credit for, and that we got to stay there to prevent it from turning into bad progress.
In other words, sir, once she sits in that chair, there's no telling what she'll discover that will prove we have to stay in Iraq.
Well, she may even become aware that we've made commitments with certain parties that require us to stay there.
Parties? Other governments?
Could be public sector, could be private. I'm sure you understand, James, we're dealing with classified matters here.
Yeah.
I'm only at liberty to tell you enough to persuade you that there's more.
And you're concerned about her campaign rhetoric in that context because? I mean, candidates overpromise and underdeliver all the time. President Company accepted, of course.
You don't need to flatter me, James. I'm a lone duck.
Well.
But I know what you're driving at. Mm-hmm. Now, look. Even professionals in this business may feel their options are constrained if they've been too specific during the campaign about such and such withdrawing or such and such ending or
such and such.
Yeah. And I'd hate for her to have even that reason to not want to feel obligated to carry on the burden laid on us by history, God, prophecy, whatever you want to call it.
You say, Mr. President, that she might even find it impossible to not continue the war throughout her term in office?
Hey, James, just word to the wise, I don't think she wants to be the one responsible for the consequences that would follow an end to the war any more than I do.
All right, sir. I'll find a way to get the message to her.
If it's all right with you, James, I'd like to feel that I can use this channel from time to time.
Mr. President, I know what it means when the President of the United States has you on speed dial. You can count on my discretion. As far as Mary knows, I'm at Dina DeLuca picking up some Kuribata pork cracklings.
Hey, great to see you. Thanks for coming. So you're saying that's why you didn't commit to having the troops out by 2013 in the debate?
Hello, wonderful to meet you. Well, of course. Sounds like he's setting some sort of trap for me and then warning me about it.
Yeah, well, my God, I think I've gained all the weight you've lost. Dang, you look good. Yeah, well, that sounds like him, all right. Look, Hill, I know you don't want my advice unless you ask for it.
Hello, I think you're at the head table. We're going to check on that. You certainly should be. I don't want your advice, even if I do ask for it.
Well, I'm just saying, maybe you ought to be careful about being too cautious. Hey, of course, I'll sign that. Now, don't you go putting it on eBay now.
So the Global Initiative was fun? Hello, I got your email. It's on my things to reply to list. Thanks.
Fun? Hell, it was like Renaissance weekend without the drinking. Well, not without all the... Hey! It's been about 1,000 years, hasn't it? Great to see you, man.
Well, I'm sorry I couldn't be there. Yeah. It looked like Davos for good-looking people. Hi! Thanks for that very generous gift.
Tell you something I've learned, Hill.
Hey, glad to see you.
And it's something that can give you some useful perspective on where you're at right now. You're not running for president, because a presidency at best lasts only 8 years.
Hi, don't you look wonderful?
You're running for the ex-presidency. That's when it starts getting good.
Hey, you, thanks for coming.
Youthful angst and middle-aged drive for power. Together they add up to Clinton something, the campaign years.
You in a loser file. I don't need your sick little home. So get me what you've got. Put your money in the pot. Let's see what you are and what you're not. Oh, come on, do your worst, boy. That's the way, that's the way. Hit me where it hurts, boy. That's the way, that's the way. Buff until you burst, boy. That's the way, that's the way. But I'll never give it up. I'll never give it up. I'll never give it up. I'll never give it up.
My friend Herrick's been shot.
No, it's just a flesh wound, Dick. Thank you. I'm better now. Way, way down on the medication. Ladies and gentlemen, since we can't look forward, really, now, regarding Iraq anymore, given the new Washington consensus, let's look back. The Spanish newspaper El País this week came out with this story. Boy, talk about outside the bubble. Reading this story for you now. 4 weeks before the Iraq invasion, George W. Bush publicly put his demand to Saddam Hussein in the following terms: either disarm or it's war. But behind closed doors, Bush knew that war was inevitable. During a long private conversation held Saturday, February 22, 2003, at his ranch with then-Spanish President José María Aznar, Bush made it clear, quote, there are 2 weeks left, and 2 weeks we'll be militarily ready. We'll be in Baghdad by the end of March, he told Aznar. We need you to help with our public opinion, Aznar requested. Bush then explains to him the likely effect of the new UN resolution. The resolution, quote, Bush, will be custom-made to help you. Aznar then offers to give European political cover to Bush, together with Blair. The conversation is impressive for its direct, friendly, and even menacing tone, when it centers on the necessity of countries like Mexico, Chile, Angola, Cameroon, and Russia to approve the new resolution as a symbol of friendship toward the United States or to suffer the consequences. Just a week before, Hans Blix had shot down with, quote, solid, well-supported data, the arguments of Colin Powell before the UN Security Council. The Spanish government had warmly supported this information from Blix. Blix had reported at the time Iraq was taking steps toward actively cooperating to resolve the outstanding disarmament questions. And it was on February 14th that the head of the International Atomic Energy Agency said, quote, there are no disarmament problems left to resolve. February 14th, 2003. The failure to get the UN resolution led Bush to decide, along with Blair and Aznar, to hold a summit in the Azores, where Bush said, we're going in. And, not even as surprising, a working draft, quote, not for distribution to personnel outside of the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad, Iraq. Sensitive but unclassified. Somehow it got on the internet. Quoting, currently, Iraq is not even capable of even rudimentary enforcement of anti-corruption laws. Though legally empowered to conduct investigations, the Commission on Public Integrity of Iraq is legally empowered. The combined security situation and the violent character of the criminal elements within the ministries of the government make investigation of corruption too hazardous for all but a tactically robust police force with the support of the Iraqi government. Currently, this support is lacking. Within the ministries, inspectors general have repeatedly complained that fighting corruption is seen as an IG function alone and is not seen as a concern outside of that office. This lack of support has allowed corruption to be the norm in many Iraqi ministries. Unarmed in the red zone, subject to intimidation, reports submitted by the Inspector General cannot be trusted to truthfully reveal criminal activity against anyone protected by the violent or powerful. The court system? It remains weak, intimidated, subject to political pressure. The Ministry of Interior is seen by Iraqis as untouchable by the anti-corruption enforcement infrastructure. Corruption investigations in the Ministry of Defense are judged to be ineffectual. Manipulation is indicated of investigations within the Ministry of Oil. Both the Anti-Corruption Institution and the Inspector General are completely ill-equipped to handle oil theft cases. Anti-corruption cases concerning the Ministry of Education have been particularly ineffective. But don't worry, it's just a working draft, not for distribution to personnel outside of the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad, Iraq. You know, the Buddhist generals are right. Shut down that internet. Oh, and by the way, when are those air quality tests on FEMA trailers going to happen? Well, late next month on the trailers in Mississippi. Of course, those are only on trailers that were stored in Mississippi after the hurricane and haven't been lived in. The CDC has not yet set a timetable for testing the occupied trailers, where people are actually breathing the formaldehyde. And the Las Vegas Review-Journal says a letter and maps from the U.S. Geological Survey obtained last week showed that an earthquake fault, passes directly beneath the footprint of a pad where spent fuel canisters would age or cool down before they're entombed at Yucca Mountain. It's just an earthquake fault. Nothing can... safe, clean, plentiful earthquake faults. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide, throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, 7.415 megahertz, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, on Sirius and XM satellite radio, around the world at two different locations on your computer via the internet. As long as it's still working, whenever you want it, live and archived, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available as a free download at www.audible.com/LeShow and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like the rest of the world paying attention the next time the monks demonstrate in Burma. If you'd agree to join with me then, wouldn't you? Alrighty, thank you very much. HarryShearer.com is the place to go for information on the music played on this broadcast, and also if you want to email the host. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the Pittsburgh, San Diego desks and Pam Halstead. Le Show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.